Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hi, I'm Lynn Hanessian, Chief Strategist of the Health Practice at Edelman. I'm joined this week by Jane Saracen Khan to talk about the findings of our recently launched Trust Barometer Special Report, Trust and Health, which clearly showed trust to be a key determinant of health. Jane is a health economist and the founder of the consultancy Think Health and the Health Populi blog, an expert on the health ecosystem with over two decades of experience publishing insights on the intersection of health and healthcare, technology and policy. Jane is here to help us make sense of the data from our new report and unpack why it matters. Jane, welcome to Trustmakers. Let's get started.
Great. Thanks for inviting me on, Lynn.
So before we get into the report, let's talk a little bit about you, Jane. Tell us a bit about how you came to be so embedded in the healthcare space, three decades of work, and ultimately came to found Think Health and the Health Populi blog. What are you focused on?
So I studied economics as an undergrad at University of Michigan, and then returned to University of Michigan to learn about public health and economics as a graduate student after my mother got diagnosed with a very rare leukemia in the early 70s. At Michigan, I was profoundly influenced by undergraduate professors and graduate professors in my thinking. And I look back at it now, and it was really a journey from then to this moment, because in the public health school, I was led by the dean at the time, Ken Warner, who was the father of studying the economics of smoking and tobacco and health behavior change. And how we save money when we prevent things. And then in undergrad, one of the most profound influencers was a Jesuit priest. I was at University of Michigan, not a Catholic school, but a professor named Bill Neenan, who's actually quite a famous Jesuit because he went on to be head of arts and sciences at Boston College, a Catholic university. But Bill taught me about urban economics, and he became a very important person in my life, even though I'm a Jew. A priest influenced me early on, and he taught me about the role of income equality and economic development for health. So between Ken and Bill and a score of other teachers, they really helped shape me as my mother was ill, having a very rich Blue Cross plan, part of a union in Detroit, Michigan. And so I learned about healthcare costs intimately in the family setting and then at school, and then eventually went into healthcare consulting, which is my entire career since graduate school.
Well, Jane, I've had the honor of presenting with you before, and I'm learning more at every turn because I have a degree in economics and then did social science research in underserved communities in Chicago. So I also took my rational number side brain around economics and behaviors and put it into social service. So let's roll up our sleeves and have a convo.
Love it.
Let's just start with the recently launched Trust Barometer Special Report, Trust and Health. You know, we found that trust was a key determinant of health. This is central to both individual and public healthcare decisions. But we also found, frankly, that trust in healthcare is under pressure. And we have seen a roller coaster during the last 2 years of pandemic. And where we are today is that since the start of the pandemic, half of the general population, and we did this survey in 9 countries, has lost confidence in their healthcare system to handle major health crises. How do you think about trust, Jane, when it comes to health and that wider health ecosystem where you have really studied over the years?
Ironically, back in 2008, I was invited in to help Edelman assess their first health engagement barometer data. And that was fielded when the Great Recession was emerging in 2008. So the timing was uncanny then in when you fielded that first survey on health engagement. And we learned in that study all those years ago that there were 3 factors that enticed people to engage for their health with organizations. Those 3 factors were trust, authenticity and satisfaction, sort of customer satisfaction, if you will, in the emerging Amazon era, right? This is 2008. So trust became part of my thinking with Edelman way back in 2008 for health. Now, over the years, I've been studying trust, working with the Edelman data for all these years. You've been publishing it at the World Economic Forum every year, and learned that there are so many lenses into trust that I've had to really read a lot and think about what's my take on it for that ecosystem you're talking about. So there are two ways I'm looking at trust now, which I think are really useful, especially looking at the Edelman data on trust and health. Patient trust now, trust from the health citizen, the health consumer, the patient, can be looked at least two ways, but I'm going to put them in two ways. The first is interpersonal trust. I trust my doctor. I trust the nurse that works with me. I trust the pharmacist. So there's this interpersonal trust where it's my world. I trust these people. But there's also a kind of trust that's social trust, that's trust of institutions. And this is where Edelman has really found over the years, the erosion of trust in government, the erosion of trust in media. And these now translate in the pandemic era as being really important factors in that split you're talking about between people, say, maybe trusting their doc, but trusting institutions, not so much. And the institutions here we're talking about are national health authorities, public health authorities, research science institutions and organizations like the NIH, et cetera. So I think we have to look at trust in those ways in the eyes of the health consumer, health citizen, because there's the interpersonal trust, but then, wow, when we look at people's trust in organizations and institutions, that's really eroded trust in vaccines, vaccinations, and public health institutions, which is now found this split as you talk about the chasm between people.
Yeah, Jane, I think the thing that was striking is, you know, in the years that we've looked at trust, you know, it sets up some expectations for various institutions. What we saw in behaviors in this study is those with higher trust in the health ecosystem are more likely to be fully vaccinated and go for regular checkups with the doctor. And I think that then, you know, when you lay out this personal and public health, the public health implication of those personal decisions are just profound. The other area of focus throughout the pandemic is this whole sort of above it all, a healthy population equals a healthy economy. And so when you take a look at trust as a determinant of the health economy, you see this, you know, really fundamental, our personal behaviors and then these public health behaviors really impacting the economy. I mean, at how readily we're able to continue to operate and function.
It's such a key point in the opinion piece essay you all asked me to write, and it's published in the World Economic Forum now. I talk about trust as a determinant of the health economy. So we talk about determinants of health. So trust in the health economy. And as it turns out, in the U.S., $1 in $5 basically in the GDP is allocated to some aspect of health. And in other developed countries, it goes down from there, down to like the UK, 12% or so. So, you know, these are the developed nations from 12 to 20%, but the US spends more and gets far less in terms of outcomes. And we've seen in the pandemic, the outcomes in the US were also in terms of the developed country comparisons in the OECD data of the wealthy countries, much worse outcomes. And that is because of your point that the health economy is tied up with the macro economy, and especially in the United States, where $1 in $5 goes to healthcare. We find that when we look at a local community, if that community did not do well in terms of COVID outcomes, that local economy also suffered a lot. It might have been a single employer economy, like in some of the agricultural states where you had these chicken processing farms where they were basically oligopolies, single or double employers in a local market. Those local economies eroded terribly. There's a combination factor then with the healthcare system, and that's that we know what physical distancing is, people staying apart 3, 4, 5, 6 feet. Well, we've seen the phenomenon of medical distancing, consumers, health systems, health citizens, patients staying out of the health system for fear of contracting the virus. And there are still people who will not return to the health system. So we're seeing healthcare marketing campaigns trying to get people back to healthcare, particularly for primary care, mental health, cancer. We've seen a terrible erosion in numbers of clients, patients coming back to healthcare. So yeah, the implications are for the local health economy, the local economy, and then you think about regional economies and then the national US or other nations economies. So they're intimately tied, health economy and macroeconomy.
So Jane, you've touched on those voices that are trusted. Could you drill down into that a little bit more? Because I, you know, really want to unpack as much as we can for our listeners and help them determine what actions they could take perhaps to help us rebuild trust.
This is such an important question, and it's part of how we solve and get out of this thing. Trust in the local market. So I talked about how in that interpersonal trust, I trust my doctor, my pharmacist, say at the local retail pharmacies, which became very trusted touch points in local communities, by the way, in the pandemic, because they were essential businesses that were open. So we could socialize with the pharmacist, if you will. So we have these local voices in our lives. We have our social networks, both offline, our families, friends, neighbors, people at our churches, synagogues, mosques, and then our online social networks, which have turned out to be super important and provocative and profound in the pandemic. So in our social networks, who we hang out with, as it turns out, whether online or offline, by the way, impacts how we behave. So, and our behavior impacts the people's behavior in our networks. So in the work of Christakis and Fowler, who wrote a book called Connected a few years ago, they studied under different scenarios how our networks, our intimate first degree networks, are impacted by our behavior. And as it turns out, if we binge drink, if we binge eat, if we smoke, et cetera, the people in our networks will have a risk of doing those things. But not only that, the profound implication here is that our networks of friends and family, their networks are also impacted by our behaviors in second, third, fourth degree networks out in concentric circles. So in fact, when we think about a virus like COVID, we've got kind of two kinds of viral going on. We've got our behavior is viral, not just if we get a vaccine, yes, if we get it, people around us will tend to get it. And again, their people and their people, but also the virality of the virus itself. So there's a terrible irony here and duality that it's a virus. Our behavior goes viral in that way. And so it's really profound. So there's a virtuous cycle. If we make a decision to get a vaccine and get vaccinated, to quit smoking, especially in the pandemic, to maybe move around a little more and exercise more, which is also good for us to get outside, breathe air. It turns out that positively impacts our networks and their networks. And isn't that a beautiful thing, right? We all love somebody somewhere. You can actually impact people's behavior that way and in a viral, amplified way, impact other people's behavior. And I think for some people, not all, that can be a motivator to make a good choice, like get vaccinated.
So Jane, you're telling me my personal health decisions can have a public health impact. Reminds us how appropriately influential we each can be in our own lives and how connected we can be to those that we care and love and worry about. So, wow.
It's profound and it's real. Christakis and Fowler are two really smart guys, and they've got the data that proves this out. It's a really important read if you haven't read it, Connected. And it extends so perfectly into this COVID pandemic in terms of what we know now.
Thanks, Jane, for that. You said what we know now. Information or misinformation has been a focal point, for better or for worse, throughout the pandemic. And I think one of the interesting findings from the study is that information is a connected aspect in building trust in the health ecosystem. Our Edelman Trust Barometer, Trust in Health survey showed information to be on par with cost as a barrier to people taking care of their health. And we think about that, you know, certainly from a US perspective, we always worry about cost as a barrier. But what our data showed globally was 2 out of 3 people saying there is a gap between how well they're taking care of their health and how well they believe they should be taking care of their health. So, you know, with this rampant, I'm going to say, infodemic, what can those in the health ecosystem, the health companies, public health authorities, healthcare providers do to provide more quality and trusted information?
So I want to go back in the time machine again to 2008 health engagement barometer, because there's a really good lesson from the Edelman work that you did back then that carries into your question, the answer to your question. And that's when people were asked in the Edelman survey, how do you define health and well-being for yourself? The first response is my physical health, of course. The second was mental and emotional health. And we're talking in the 80% here, very high. The third is my appearance and my look portends how I feel about my wellness. And the fourth factor, which was almost 80% of the US population in 2008, said my financial wellness. So in places like Brazil, India, et cetera, where people have a large burden of financial payment for healthcare and self-care, you will find that answer, which is my financial well-being speaks to my physical well-being. And we see that now, the profound impact of financial wellness on COVID outcomes. If you had lower incomes per annum, if you couldn't work from home via an internet connection, either because you couldn't do your job from home or you couldn't afford the data plan for broadband to the home, another huge lesson from the pandemic, that impacted your health. And these are cost issues that then shape health and well-being. So for those patients who feel financially unwell, that's part of the answer to cost and information. Information is great, but if I can't afford the data plan for broadband and can't do telehealth to access care when I'm not supposed to go out, that has an impact on patient outcomes and ultimately costs, because those people get sicker, they end up in the health system, and that is an unvirtuous cycle. So that's why we have to think about these things holistically to then answer the rest of your question, how do healthcare providers and sort of the OG health system deal with information and creating trust, building trust? It's these other factors too that people value for health. My financial wellness, working with local banks, local community colleges that teach people about health, well-being, exercise, gyms, and the Y in many communities. The YMCA, YWCA is so important for many communities and especially lower income communities as a trusted place to go for kids, for older people. So for healthcare providers to network locally, build ecosystem bridges locally that are trusted with churches, the Y, the bank, the grocery store, a huge place as a health destination, whether you're looking at then the pharmacy and the grocery store, Kroger as a wellness brand, or I just wrote about that in my blog earlier this week, or a CVS, Aetna, a Walgreens, a Rite Aid. These also have become really trusted places to go for health and well-being. And it's the more we can bring those determinants of health together in local communities that can help bolster trust, through trusted collaborators with that, with areas of public health that may not be so trusted.
You know, Jane, I'm going to throw one other trusted relationship in there. And I think it picks up on that point that you highlighted about local, and that's my employer. Because I think that, you know, you describe really nicely the hurdles to getting information to people. You know, my employer is right there with my family in terms of exposure and time. And what we found in this study, in this Edelman study, is that nearly 8 in 10 employees expect their company to play a meaningful role in health. So let's open this to a slight pivot. So what role should employers be playing in providing quality health information?
Right. Well, in many parts of the world, the employer is the purveyor of health insurance, or at least health benefits in some way, including the financial wellness benefits, which are becoming increasingly important to people, daycare, family benefits, et cetera. So employers have been trusted now in the Edelman Trust Barometer for several years, but in the pandemic, they're playing a particularly important role because that's who employees listen to in terms of when can we go back to work? Should we stay home? Do we dare, you know, drive in our safe cars or take public transportation with a mask, et cetera? And how do you stay distanced on the New York subway is another question. So employers have been playing that role now for a few years, but now more than ever in this evolving future of workplace, which is increasingly hybrid, home and at work, and people listening and trusting the employer for that health information. So the chief medical officer in big companies is becoming strategically very important to not only inform the chief human resource officer, but to become a healthcare business. So we used to say every company is a tech company now. And today in the COVID era, the pandemic era, every company has to be partially a health company, thinking about the well-being of their employees, not just with respect to the coronavirus, but with mental and emotional and behavioral health, because we've seen the epidemic in the pandemic has been the de-tabooing and the coming out of people who are saying, yeah, I'm suffering from anxiety and depression, which employers are now dealing with in terms of their productive workforce, the present workforce, et cetera. So I think we've got a lot of people depending on their employers now for more than a quote paycheck. They're looking at the holistic benefits for the holistic definition of health in the eye of the patient.
Jane, I think that's really terrific. And I think it gets now to my next sort of common area about system. You know, it's interesting. In our study, we found only 1 in 2 actually regularly consuming health information. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to sort of think about how the actions of employers, how everyone is engaged in some way in the ecosystem of making a difference. I'm remembering some work that we did as Edelman many years ago with one of our Chicago area pediatric hospitals, in which we were looking at obesity prevention in children. And not once did we say fat, not once did we say, you know, prevent weight. And I thought that your blog post about Kroger and the new app that Dr. Lustig is involved in is wonderful, because it's creating a healthy environment and giving people the tools they can use to affect their health and adopt healthy behaviors. I'm always reminded people will not buy a health food. They're going to buy a tasty food. So the idea of delicious food that can be healthy. So can we talk a little bit about this idea of ecosystem and breaking down those barriers, something you are so passionate about, and how, you know, companies in and out of health, everybody, institutions can play a role here?
Well, I'm passionate about it because with the core of me as a health economist, I know this is how we're going to do better in terms of our quadruple aim, right? Improving care for the population, improving the care experience by bringing people value-based care that's within their value structure, reducing costs, and finally propping up and supporting our healthcare providers, doctors and nurses who've been so burned out before the pandemic and now turbocharging down in terms of burnout. So we've really got to think about that quote, quadruple aim in terms of how do we help save the health system, which benefits every health citizen. This is not a political thing. All of us are going to get diagnosed with something sooner or later. So this behooves everybody to be part of this ecosystem. And that means things like you're talking about, which is food as medicine. We saw the implosion of food systems around many countries where people couldn't have access to things. And as a sidebar, by the way, food supply may get further eroded globally in the moment we're in right now in the Ukraine-Russia conflict. So just as a forecaster, you and I both being, we are now having that as not a wild card anymore, but an uncertainty. So we keep that in mind as we plan. But food, transportation, safe neighborhoods, clean air, clean water. I'm living in Europe right now, and I note that clean air here is a huge part of ESG for companies to get involved in. So the idea of quantifying a company and organization's carbon footprint is really important. The US is behind, but it takes a village to solve a pandemic, to build back public health across not just healthcare, but all these other determinants of health that shape well-being, that determine well-being. And the healthcare system cannot be assumed or given the responsibility to solve all those problems. This is public policy. This is local policy. This is education. So again, it's the kumbaya moment to build the ecosystem back together with the person, the health citizen at the center. This is who we do it for. And guess what? That's all of us. We're all health citizens. So the more we understand our connectedness with each other and with social policies, as you pointed out, to make things easier, to make the good choice for food or to take public transportation or to play outside because it's safe versus staying inside on digital tools, digital platforms. We got to make it better and easier for people to be healthy and act healthy and own their health.
An incredible message to share. And we know, again, I'm going to go back to the data on this. One of the points that we found is that the pandemic has resulted in less confidence in our health system. Only 52% of the respondents to the survey say the pandemic has decreased. 52% of the respondents say the pandemic has decreased their confidence that the health system is well equipped to handle major health crises. So it's we're at the point now where we need to be building the foundation for healthier populations, and I think that's going to be an incredible collective effort to focus on.
Amen.
As we look toward a post-pandemic world, goodness knows when that arrives, how would you summarize the top challenges facing the health ecosystem?
We went into the pandemic with income inequality and risks for determinants of health pre-shading what outcomes were going to be as early as April 2020. We started to recognize that there were more Black people, people who were Hispanic, poorer people dying at a higher, contracting the virus and then dying at a higher rate of complications from the coronavirus. So we're still stuck here with these difficult, thorny determinants of health. And not only are they sort of Maslow hierarchy basic needs things, but we add in their Wi-Fi and connectivity as a determinant of health. People who could digitally transform at home, work at home, cook at home, exercise at home, go to school from home, did better in the pandemic financially, educationally, and emotionally, mentally. People who could not connect for whatever reason fared less well. We have data on that now, which I have written about it in my blog. It's published in JAMA and the New England Journal, peer-reviewed data that show if you didn't have internet, you are more likely to die. So we need to rebuild looking at this entire determinants of health structure. Again, not putting all this pressure on the health system to do food security and transportation with Uber and Lyft, which, by the way, hospitals and health plans are doing. But that's an awful lot to ask of healthcare providers and health plans to do, when in fact, that's the purview of public health and public policy. So I think we need to have hopefully a come to Lord moment, which is let's understand how we can do this better, because there will be not only this pandemic lasting, but there's going to be another one, Lori Garrett and other smart people tell us. So let's listen and try to be smarter this time. And I want to be hopeful about this and leave everyone with the simple three-word prayer, love thy neighbor. Because if we do that, we should look to build back our public health infrastructure and public policy to benefit ourselves and our neighbors alike. That's what I will leave on.
Well, Jane, thank you for coming on the show and sharing your insight and expertise. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.